Amazon Web Services.
Welcome to the Cloud On Out podcast. My name is Andreas, and today I'm not joined by Michael, my brother, but by Michael Hausenblas. He is a product developer advocate at AWS. Nice to have you on the show, Michael.
Thank you so much for having me, Andreas.
So, Michael, your title is product developer advocate. So what does that mean?
Actually, it means the first part hints at it, that I'm in the service team, in the container service team, really, and ECR, the container registry, happens to be part of that offering of that service, and I'm kind of like, the role is kind of like a glue between, on the one hand, PMs, the product managers who own a certain offering, and the engineers who actually write the code and then operate the code, and in between you need. Or it makes a lot of sense to have an engineer who also is not afraid to speak to people, to give talks, to talk to customers and learn from them, and give that feedback back into the roadmap and inform what we should be doing, how we should be doing. I focus a lot on UX, right? Like, I want to feel the pain, and I'm aware of it, that there is pain using things, right? And that kind of feedback helps to improve our products and offerings.
Wow, that sounds like a really interesting and also very important role.
Very cool. I think so, yeah.
I like it. I like it. Okay, yeah. So this is episode 27 of the Cloud On Out podcast. We are recording that on September 25th. And the topic, so you already mentioned it a little bit. So what we want to talk about today, Michael, is we want to go over the difference between the ECR, so the Elastic Container Registry, and I will compare that to other container registries, namely Docker Hub and GitHub, the GitHub Container Registry, which is quite new. So the idea is that, yeah, we talk a little bit, maybe the most important part will be ECR, but I will try to compare that to the other two services. And what I want to do is also, I want to highlight typical scenarios for the different products, so when it maybe makes sense to use one of them. Is that fine with you, Michael?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's good.
Cool. Okay, so I want to start. So first of all, what is a container registry? So Michael, if I ask you that, and you don't have the possibility to look it up in Wikipedia, so how would you describe it? How would you describe it to someone who has never been using a container registry?
Right. So in a sense, on a non-technical level, right, of course you could refer to, you know, the specifications, but in the non-technical terms, it's essentially the handover between development and operations, right? So you, as a developer, you build artifacts, right? And in the good old times, we, you know, I remember 15 years ago, whatever, how would I distribute that artifact? Well, I would, I admit I did that, FTP somewhere, and then, you know, download stuff, right? That would be the way how I would get the stuff, that the jar file, war file, or whatever it was that I had on my desktop, into a production or staging environment, right? And in the context of containers, the way how to get this stuff, how to get these artifacts that you build as a developer into a, usually, since we're talking about containers, you have a container orchestrator like Kubernetes or ECS or whatever, that then pulls these container images, these artifacts, and you know, deploys them and runs them on some machines, right? And in that sense, it's not only this technical artifact, no pun intended, this technical interface, but it's very much an interface between development and operations.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that definition very much. Cool. Yeah. So I think, so from my perspective, really the magic of containers, or one part of the magic, is that we can easily build those artifacts, those container images, and then share them with others. So share them with other developers, share them with our infrastructure, and bundling all of that in our Docker container images. And I think that's really the magic, or a big part of the magic of everything. And the registry is basically a central place where we can store upload and fetch those container images from. So the terminology here is you push and pull your container image to the registry. And typically, that helps. Yeah, you don't have two machines have to be online to be able to share an image, but you have one central place where you store that. And that's what we want to talk about today.
Right. And crucially, you mentioned already, you know, the main feature of containers is not, I hear that and see that quite often still mentioned, drawing the parallels with VMs and talking about isolation. This is not really true. And with my security, container security hat on, I can really guarantee you that if you focus on that part, you'll probably be disappointed or you know, you will wake up to a bad surprise. It's really this application level dependency management, right? It's packaging up your dependencies, and your dependency might be, you know, a configuration file. If you look at, you know, Python or whatever, you might have something there that configures says, you know, I am depending on these things. It might be a library, it might be whatever, but it packages it in a standardized way so you can run it on your Raspberry Pi if you want, you can run it on ECS if you want, you can run it on whatever other target system, and you have a certain guarantee that it will just run because it has all the dependencies with it.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, so I think that is really that comes very close to the point here. So yeah, so okay, so we introduced what is a container registry. We will have those three options that we will go through: ECR, Docker Hub, and GitHub Container Registry. But before we do that, I want to just introduce a few scenarios where you actually need a container registry, because when you just use containers on your local machine, you can do local development with containers as well. That might be a good approach as well. But when do you really need a container registry? So when that makes sense. So I think the first scenario for me is whenever I build infrastructure on AWS for one of our consulting clients, I always start with building a pipeline. So the CI/CD pipeline, deployment pipeline, however you call that. So the automation of fetching the source code from the source code repository, building, bundling that, and then creating a container artifact out of everything, the container image. And if you do something like that and then later deploy that to AWS with the help of Terraform or CloudFormation or CDK, you need a way to store that artifact so that you really, at the beginning of the pipeline, you create that artifact, store it somewhere, and then it travels through the whole process. It goes through all the different steps, maybe a test environment, maybe canary deployments, or maybe just deployments on a production system. And it really helps a lot if you have one central place where you store all these artifacts so that every part in the process can refer to the image later and basically also download it very easily, for example, to deploy it on ECS or ECR. So I would say this is probably a scenario where making use of a container registry really helps, because otherwise, how do you ship that artifact through the pipeline, right?
Exactly.
But I think there are other scenarios for using a container registry as well. So what I noticed recently is more and more open source projects, but also software vendors, they really offer a Docker or container image with their software that you can easily use to run that on your own infrastructure. Right. And I think that's another scenario why you would use a container registry if you want to just distribute your software worldwide over the internet. Yep. So that makes sense to use a public container registry that everyone can access. So I think that is another very popular use case for a container registry. And the third scenario that I often see in practice is, if multiple developers collaborate together to work on a, let's say, microservice architecture, or even multiple teams within an organization need to work together, it really helps if those developers have a way to share their parts of the system, their microservices, with each other, so that others can easily use those pre-built artifacts, for example, for testing purposes or trying things out on their own machines. So I think this is another area where it really helps if you have one container registry that the whole organization or that parts of the organization can use to collaborate on software artifacts, basically. So that's the, I would say that's the three scenarios I see or I use container registry most often for. Can you think of any other scenarios where it would make sense to introduce a container registry?
Right. The best way to think about it, I believe, is if we expand our definition or understanding of artifact, right? So OCI, the specification, the Linux Foundation project talks about artifacts, right? And there's a reason for that. It's not just container images. And in fact, we are in the middle of this transformation from container registry and container images to general purpose artifacts, right? If you look around, you will see that more and more registries that initially focused on distributing container images are now supporting many more artifacts. And the reason being that while it's true what all that you said is true, but you also want to have other artifacts along with your container images for certain use cases. For example, if you want to deploy or want to offer not only the container image itself so that you can do a Docker run on your desktop, but also, let's say, enable someone to deploy that in their Kubernetes cluster, then typically you end up, you know, having some Helm charts or whatnot, right? So these are also artifacts, and why not storing them also in the same place, essentially, right? Why having multiple ways to get to your artifacts, everything you need essentially to run that application, right? So I'd like to suggest to expand this understanding or definition that we're really talking about a set of artifacts. It could be a Helm chart. It could be policy related, right? It could be an OPUB bundle, an open policy agent bundle, mm-hmm. having policies in there that describe or define runtime policies that should be applied, etc. So once you understand it's not just container images, that opens up a whole new set of use cases, right? If think of very often we see that many customers that have exactly that need, thinking about coming back to OPA and Rego, they need to enforce certain policies in order to be compliant with, you know, PCI DSS, for example, if you're a financial institution, or healthcare providers who need to comply, for example, with HIPAA. HIPAA. And then you see that while the container images obviously are the kind of like central piece, because that is where your application lives, the application depends on or has other artifacts around it that actually make it useful, right? If you just have a container image, that's great, right? But how do you actually make it run, right? Besides the use case where you actually run it on a single machine where you say Docker run, right? You need other artifacts typically, right? And then you can decide, do you want to separate them? Do you also want to apply this good practice of immutable infrastructure? And part of that is obviously, you know, if you figure out there is a security issue or whatever, a new feature or a bug fix, rather than changing that in the running container, you build a new container image and you deploy that new container image, right? And the same is true for everything else, right? If you see a violation in your policy or you want to tweak something in your Helm chart, then you obviously should go through the CI pipeline. You should have the full integration test. You should have the full smoke test, et cetera, et cetera. Build a new artifact, deploy that, push it to the registry, and then let it, whatever then the target environment is. Obviously, if it's a container, then it's a container orchestrator like EKS or ECS. If it's, OPA might have different ways to get to it, right? In the context of Kubernetes, you very likely are going to use Gatekeeper that works in the API server as an admission webhook or controller in there. But that's what I mean. Like, if we talk about more artifacts, not just container images, you will see more use cases popping up.
Okay, yeah, very interesting. So basically, we extend that not only having the image, but also everything else we need to deploy those containers.
Exactly.
That sounds really interesting. And I think, we see some. So I'm, you know that, Michael. So I'm the Terraform and CloudFormation guy, and we have those. There is a registry at least for Terraform, and some ways to do it with CloudFormation. So I think it really makes sense if you have really all you need bundled in one place and keep that, archive that in one place. That really makes sense to me. So I really like that approach coming from I think it's probably coming from the Kubernetes world, right? So it really makes sense to bundle all of that together. Yeah, I like that. Very cool.
Definitely motivated or you know, a lot of proponents come from there, but I would not, you know, it's not limited to Kubernetes, let's put it that
way. It's not, yeah, but the idea, yeah, I really like the idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. Okay, yeah, so we talked about some scenarios why you would want to use the container registry, and I really want to dive into, first of all, Amazon ECR. So this stands for the Elastic Container Registry. I've done a survey on Twitter and I ask, which container registry do you use to deploy your workloads on AWS? And if I remember correctly, it was something like 80 or 90% are using ECR. And I think that's for a reason. It really is probably the best way, the best fitting registry for workloads that you run on AWS. And I would say, I don't know if you agree with that, but I would say the reason for that is mostly that ECR handles authentication and authorization with AWS Identity and Access Management. So that allows it to be very well integrated into all the different AWS services. So I think that is really, I would say this is one of the huge advantages when you are in the AWS ecosystem, that you're using the same authentication authorization mechanism that you do for the rest of your infrastructure.
Right. And this is not a coincidence, because obviously, although, you know, I am part of the container service team and focus obviously on container offerings like ECR and etc. From a customer perspective, our customers don't care about specific services, right? It's really AWS is the product, right? If you need to solve a certain business issue, you're not interested in hearing from someone from our service team, well, you know, this is a storage issue or networking issue, you know, good luck with that. You want, you know, that your entire application works, and part of that is obviously the integration. And the way how AWS is set up means that the service teams, container service team being one example, are very agile, are very, you know, able to move very fast. But that also requires us to be good or to focus on the integration between the different offerings, right? Otherwise, again, and that is where I luckily have enough work cut out, the users suffer, right? If it doesn't integrate nicely and deeply, then it's not as useful. Of course, you can always say, I can build these integrations myself, but again, you should not be doing that, right? You should be able to benefit from that integration from the get-go.
Yeah. So basically, whenever you want to deploy containers on AWS, it's the easiest choice to use ECR because of the integrations. Yeah. So one thing I missed to mention that I would say is important. So ECR is a private registry. It provides you private repositories.
Yes.
So I like that. So, because by default, you are the only one who has access to whatever you store there. I actually prefer services where the intention is very clear. Is this for private or for public usage? So, with S3, we have a mixture, like kind of. And I would think that leads to confusion. So I really like that approach, that this really focuses on being a private registry. Of course, you can provide access. I think, is it? No, you can't publicly, but you can. You could, for example, for any authenticated IAM entity, right? Yeah, but it really focuses on the private part. So I really like that. And it's intended to be used like that. I want to mention two features that I really like about ECR, and I want to one of that is it comes with immutable image tags. Mm. So what that means, if you create a Docker container image, and add a tag to that. So let's say this is version one of my container image, and you, if you push that to ECR, if you have enabled immutable image tags, ECR will not allow someone else to push another image with the same tag. And I was just recently, I was part of a call where someone was doing a risk assessment of an infrastructure and application. And the question was, how do we prevent someone in the process to modify the artifact? And I said, hey, we have that in place because it's not possible to override the tag that we pass through the pipeline is always referring to the image that we created once at the beginning. And this is, I think, a very cool feature.
Right. And it comes basically down to, on the one hand, reproducible builds, and on the other hand, the semantics of tags. And, you know, like it or not, that's one of the things we just have to live with, the way how tags in Docker originally have been defined, or the semantics have been defined. And you do see, I have noticed that in Kubernetes, I've been, you know, in that community for 5 years now, and this impedance mismatch between in Kubernetes, the expectation is that this image is, or the tag really, is immutable, whereas Docker doesn't enforce that. It doesn't tell you, right? So if you do have a mechanism that actually enforces that, then you're in a much better place. You don't run into a set of issues. And the other one is really around reproducible builds, right? Like the theory would be that no matter what you're doing, right, if you write a Docker file today and you share that Docker file, so not the container image, right? Not the tar file with the JSON embedded, but really the Docker file, the text Docker file, right? And I take that tomorrow and do a Docker build on it, then the expectation would be that the resulting image is the same, right? That would be on a high level the expectation. Turns out that's not true, because many of those things are outside of your control. And unless you are able to replicate the entire infrastructure, you will never be able to have 100% reproducible builds. But you can, or you should, strive to get there. And having mechanisms like you mentioned, the immutable tag in ECR, definitely supports you, helps you in that endeavor. Yeah.
I think another very interesting feature is of ECR is, at least from my perspective, is the image scanning feature. So I think out of the box, what you can have is you can enable image scanning for pushes. So whenever you push a new image to the repository, it will start an image scanning job. And it uses an open source project, Claire. And basically what they do is they check for known security vulnerabilities, and you get back a report. And doing that makes sure that whenever you push a new image, for example, when your pipeline builds a new image, pushes that to the registry, you get immediately feedback on if you have anything security related to do with that image before it parses the whole process. I think as far as I know, there is no built-in feature that images are scanned periodically, but you can build that on your own by using Lambda functions, whatever. I do that often to have also checks in place if a running image shows later any issues, any CVEs coming up here. So that's, I think, also interesting. I think a really interesting feature. And the good thing here is you don't have to build that in your pipeline yourself. You just use that feature out of the box.
And that is something I was lucky enough and very glad that I was part of that launch last year. I think it was pretty much exactly a year ago, beginning of September 2019, when we launched that feature. And it is specific to operating system level scanning. So we don't scan your jar file or any other application specific things, but it is free. And that means that a kind of like basic scanning that you essentially just need to opt in, right? You just say, yeah, please do that. It is throttled, right? You can't change, you can't scan every 5 minutes or whatever. I would need to look up. I know that at launch, I think we throttled it with one scan per day or 24 hours to get a handle on, you know, how much scanning will there be going on, because obviously a certain load on our infrastructure. And,
sure.
You know, and also to be honest, right, if you, let's say you want to very aggressively scan, right, like you want to scan every hour, sure, you know, we could enable that. But you have to ask yourself, if you get a report, or when you get a report, then are you actually able to react to that? Can you patch? Can you create a new version fast enough? And if your cycle is like, I don't know, every second day or once a week, what good is it that you know about a new vulnerability within an hour, right? So that's where it's like, you know, kind of understandable why we chose that initially.
Absolutely. And I think also it doesn't make sense to scan all of the images because you're probably only using a small fraction of that. So for me, when I built that automation in, I always try to build it in a way that it only scans the images that are currently running on any environment, because otherwise it's just wasted resources, even if I don't have to pay for it. Yeah.
Something like if I look at the last year's 2019 AWS Container Security Survey that I did, and currently it's still ongoing, so I encourage you to have a look and participate in the survey. And if I look at that, currently almost 40% say that they are actually doing this static container, as we call it, static container scanning, which means using the ECR feature. The second one is 25% not, and the third one is do-it-yourself CLAIRE, so they're running CLAIRE by themselves. The fourth one is Trivi by Aqua Security, then Sysdig, commercial offering Aqua Security, Prisma Cloud, formerly Twistlock, and then StackRocks. So that is the majority, like it's really only quote unquote 25% who are still not scanning. And I definitely, so if I have one wish for Christmas, like please do scanning in whatever form. That's like basic container image hygiene, right? You should be scanning.
Absolutely, yeah. Cool. So there's one topic that comes to my head right now. There is another, so one problem when using any container registry is basically you build images, you push them to the registry, but how do you get rid of old ones that you are no longer using? Because right, typically right. You accumulate images, and that occupies in the long term, it occupies a lot of storage that you have to pay for. So the question is, what's your take on deleting images that are no longer needed? So how to implement that? How to make sure you're not storing images forever, but on the other side, keep the ones that you might need in the future? So that's always a tricky thing. So I'm interested in your take on that.
Right. So ideally, you would obviously have a fully automated mechanism, right? So the entire life cycle covering everything from your local, you know, you probably also want to apply this policy locally, right? I mean, you probably run out of disk space at some point.
Yes. If I say
Docker images locally, like, oh my God, right? I need some 10, 20 gigs. I do a prune there locally. But you know, obviously as well through the CI pipeline in ECR, for example. So you want to automate that, right? You want to have certain policy there, retention policy, where you, for various reasons, might want to keep around certain things. Again, think of compliance reasons. You might need to keep a certain version around for a certain time. In the context of AWS, we have certain offerings, like you might know about S3 Glacier, where you can move stuff that you don't regularly access, but it's still around and it's very, very, very cheap. So, you know, maybe in an ideal world, it would A, be automated, and B, take the In the data engineering context, we call it the data temperature into account. So are you still using it? Is that something? And you may, right? There might be, you know, you might be offering different versions of your application, and you need to keep a certain version around for a certain time, depending on your SLA or whatever. And that's why, you know, you can't immediately aggressively prune and throw away everything. But you know, you can attach essentially to each of the container images or artifacts in general a certain temperature and say, like, if it's hot, then, you know, you keep it there. Then after you know, two versions or whatever, you move it somewhere else, and then eventually it ends up on Glacier, for example. And but you still have it around, right? If you need it for whatever reasons, you can get it, right? You don't lose it in that sense.
Oh, Michael, that would be a feature request
for example. Absolutely.
To have that automated.
Absolutely.
That would be really
always
cool. Yeah.
Always happy to. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very cool idea. Yeah. I never thought about that. So I tried the, how's the feature called in ECR that deletes images automatically after a while?
The lifecycle
policy, is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Lifecycle policy.
Yeah. So I use that. And but sometimes, yeah, you have that requirements that you keep the images around. So my first AWS project was for a finance institution, and we had to keep built like that for, I think it was 10 years, if I remember it correctly. But then maybe, yeah, using it, copying that to a three myth with Glacier, that's maybe an interesting idea.
Right.
Very cool.
That's where I kind of assumed that I should not have. Yes, I should have pointed it out. Yes, ECR has a native feature called lifecycle policies that allow you to do that. But the part that I'm pretty sure it's not yet there. You cannot yet essentially assign temperatures or whatever you want to, however you want to call it, and immediately automatically move it to Glacier. But that would probably be something that in the long run people might also be interested in.
Yeah, very cool. Okay, cool. Yeah, so I think we, from my perspective, we covered many important parts of ECR. So besides that, it just works. So I never had an issue with using ECR. It's rock solid. It works out of the box. It scales. You don't have any maintenance work to do, basically. And I would say, so coming from the scenarios from the beginning, I would say ECR is really the go-to choice for a container registry to deploy container workloads on AWS. So if you have a deployment pipeline, really using ECR is I would say the go-to choice here. Besides that, so as you are a product developer advocate, so you probably can tell us a little bit on what is going on at ECR right now. So about the recent announcements, maybe also the roadmap, where this is going to.
Absolutely. So 2020 has really been, besides all other things, if we ignore COVID and the rest, a really interesting and exciting year for ECR specifically. We shipped a number of super interesting features, and we're not done yet, right? The year is not over yet, and you can expect more, but let's first review what we have shipped this year. And that is starting in chronological order with native support for multi-architecture. So the use case there is essentially, you might have heard or even used Graviton, which is ARM-based, offering EC2 instance types that have a really interesting price, performance offering there. And given that it's ARM, and by default, I guess many people built for AMD 86, you probably want something in the registry that makes it more easy and smoother to support images for multiple architectures, like ISA for instruction set architectures. And we shipped that, and I would need to check, I think in May, yes, my colleague Jesse Butler wrote a launch blog post, and I shared that blog post where he goes into detail, like what it actually means, the technicalities. It uses what is called an OCI manifest, et cetera, et cetera. Got hung up on the technical details. It essentially means you can now automatically create, push, and manage container images, and by extension, our artifacts for any architecture, and that's super in this context of, you know, using it in Graviton, super super interesting for people.
So one question on that. So do I have to do something special when building the image? Probably I have.
Ish, as I mentioned, there is this how is it called, Docker manifest create command there. Mm-hmm. It's a minor step. It's like, you know, if you have Docker build, etc., etc., it's like one more step, But the rest is handled for you, right? We now understand that natively. So if you then at some point in time essentially look at that image, you will see that the manifest says, yeah, the media type is whatever Docker distribution manifest v2 plus JSON, and the platform architecture is AMD64 or ARM64. So your interface essentially is this Docker manifest command, which is in addition to the Docker build. So yes, of course, there is a little bit of an additional overhead, but the rest is handled for you.
Okay, so that's definitely something I have to look into. It's on my to-do list for so long. Okay, cool stuff.
Yeah,
okay.
As I said, it makes mostly sense if you are deploying, if your target is anything Graviton-based, Graviton mm-hmm. nowadays, obviously. Mm-hmm. The second thing we launched, and I was lucky enough to do that launch with an engineer there, Shubhra, she was the lead engineer there, is OCI artifact support. And that is, if you remember the beginning where I said we see this move towards a general purpose registry, not only for container images, this is super exciting because it means now, nowadays in September 2020, that you can push anything there, really, right? In that blog post, we went through showing how you can do Helm charts and OPA bundles, but these are just two examples, right? You can literally put whatever you need in terms of artifacts in there, right? So you have not only a container image in there, but let's say also your Helm chart and, for example, an OPA bundle that then defines, you know, what your requirements are, your policies are in terms of what you can deploy, from where you can deploy it, who has to sign off on it, who has to review it, et cetera, right? These kind of artifacts.
Cool. That sounds cool. Okay.
Right. So and as I said, we are not, 2020 is not over. There is reInvent coming up and definitely a few, I can't really get into details, but I will share the container roadmap link with you where you can filter for ECR. And there's a little tip just between the two of us. You can not only filter for ECR, but then you can also look at the column where it says coming soon. And that is typically a really good hint. PMs, would the product manager responsible for that would look at that and move that into that column if the launch is kind of imminent, right? That doesn't necessarily mean like it's going to be launched next week, but it means that it's very, very soon. So if you ask yourself, should I be, things like cross-region replication or whatever else you're wondering, once it's in that coming soon, so the column where it says we're working on it essentially means, our engineers are coding, they're testing, et cetera, and once it's towards moving in that column coming soon, it means the launch is imminent, right? It could be, as I said, a couple of days, it could be a couple of weeks, depends on many things, depends on, scale testing, AppSec reviews, many, many things. We want to make sure that we are ready for the operation and we don't disappoint when we launch. But it essentially is a very strong signal that it will be launched very soon. So keep an eye on that if you're interested in any kind of upcoming ECR features.
Mm-hmm. Cool stuff. Yeah, the container roadmap is, I think it's really cool to have that transparently, what you're working on. That helps a lot when deciding to build something on your own or just to wait for
exactly.
it to come around.
Exactly.
That's really helpful. Yeah, cool. Thanks for sharing. So, Michael, is there anything else that I forgot to talk about when it comes to ECR?
So there are, again, if I look at the ongoing, the 2020 container security survey, as I said, most folks already are scanning the container images at rest in ECR. But there is also another piece that people are interested in. And again, not wildly, if you look at the 2019 results, not wildly different, but maybe interesting for folks to start having a look at that. And that is signing container images. And that essentially, again, we're still at around 90% who say, nah, we are not doing it, we're not interested in whatever, and only around combined 10% or so that are either looking at or already using Notary. And in that context, we are working, we as in AWS, we're working together with our colleagues from Red Hat and Microsoft, etc. And actually, this is very much driven by I think, Steve Lasker from the Azure team, that getting this Notary version 2 out there, it's still, you know, essentially based on this TUF framework and the update framework, but getting that right in terms of design, in terms of UX, etc., that when people are ready, and we cloud providers are ready, that people can actually in a nice and not too complex way sign their images, and with signing the images, obviously a number in terms of defense in depth, a number of layers can be realized with that.
And what's the benefit of signing the image? So why should I think about doing that?
So there is a whole class, like if you do the threat modeling, there's a whole class of attacks that are possible by essentially, like if I ask you to do a an sh curl, whatever, like, you know, you just, whatever I give you back from curl, you just execute it. And ideally with sudo, right? Sudo sh, whatever, right? Like you just trust whatever I give you. You may be lucky and everything is fine, or you may not, right? So if I know, right, if I trust you, right, you personally, as a person or as a company or whatever, it doesn't matter. And I can verify, I can cryptographically, like have a proof, because, you know, the PKI, the CA essentially says, yes, that's you. And I pull that image and run that. I still might run into issues, but at least I know it's from you, and I can sue the heck out of you if something goes
wrong. Okay, so that means basically, so one threat is that for whatever reason, my image gets modified,
compromised
on the container registry, or somewhere in between. Somewhere in between the one who builds it and the one who pushes it. Okay,
and the bigger context really is and. Again, if I look at the data there, I think it's still, even more. Like if a question around supply chain management, 93% still say no, or like not interested, not managing, and only 2.7% say they're using Intoto, and even less Grafeas. Mm-hmm. So think of it in the same way that, I don't know, do you eat meat? Do you like burger or whatever?
I don't do, no.
You don't do, but you might know people who do. And
I do.
And you know, we are pretty much used nowadays, if we go shop meat, whatever, that you see exactly where a certain piece of meat comes from, right? You have essentially the supply chain there. Theoretically, you could call up that farmer and say like, yo, what about that cow or whatever, right? So that requires that the entire supply chain is documented. It's clear who did what, who handled it, et cetera, et cetera. So if there are issues, you at least have theoretically a handle to go back to the source. And the same thing is true for supply chain management with software artifacts, right? If I have no idea, and you know, that might sound like, why would you not have that idea? But in a very large environment, if you think about a multinational or even a moderately bigger, could be in a single country, but an organization that is sufficiently big enough, you might not have an idea looking at something, being able to say, yep, that was the build that Andreas did on Monday at 2 p.m. in this machine, right? And having that way to do that, capturing everything, which is mainly metadata, if you look at Intoto and Grafeas, it's mainly metadata, but combining that with a digital signature, with a cryptography valid digital signature, you can actually prove, yes, you know, there is no excuse. Andreas built that and you know, introduced that backdoor there, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. Very interesting. Very interesting stuff. So we've gone through Amazon ECR, and at the beginning I promised I want to compare Amazon ECR to two other container registries as well. And I want to jump on that next. So the next one is Docker Hub. So Docker Hub is, I would say, it's the thing here is it's the default registry for Docker. So whenever you do Docker run, the default registry that is behind that is Docker Hub. So That is why many open source projects, software vendors use Docker Hub to host their container images. Because, yeah, it's the default and it's the power of the default, right? As the default browser on your machine or whatever, it's really the easiest one to access. Besides that, Docker Hub comes in two flavors. So there's a public version, and you can also have private repositories on Docker Hub as well. That's the part that you're paying for. The public part is, you can say it is free with some limitations. And so the magic here, because it's the default, when you type in something like docker run nginx colon latest, this will just spin up the container image. If you use any other container registry like ECR or something like that, you have to type in the URL of the registry, and this can be quite long, actually. So I haven't counted the characters, but it's, I would guess, 30 characters, something like that, to access your ECR repository. And so this is fine, of course, for internal use cases and pipelines and stuff. But when it really comes to discover container images and to share that publicly, this is, I would really think this is a benefit from using the Docker Hub for stuff like that. So that's why I think Docker Hub is really an interesting choice when you really aim to distribute a Docker image, a container image, publicly. So then I think that is really interesting. It's also interesting that you don't even have to authenticate to access Docker Hub. However, recently Docker Hub changed the rules a little bit. So they introduced really strict rate limits on how many images you can pull per second. So you can do, I think now it's 100 pulls for unauthenticated users, and it's 200 for authenticated users. This was causing troubles in one of our pipelines, because accidentally we were pulling a lot of Docker images, and then we run into that rate limit. So that is, I think Docker Hub has a little bit the problem that because they are the default and a lot of free stuff is stored there, they have to probably to look at the costs of the whole infrastructure a little bit, and then introducing those rate limits.
One comment on it's, I'm not commenting on Docker Hub per se, but on in general, you mentioned registry, right? And Docker Hub goes way beyond that. And if you later on compare it to what GitHub now offers, you have to differentiate, or it makes sense, you don't have to, but it makes sense to differentiate between the pure OCI compliant registry functionality, which means I can do a Docker push and then can do a Docker pull again. That's kind of like the bar, right? Like below that, you're not a real registry. On the other hand, you also have the discovery part. Imagine you have the use case of, I want to find Doom, right? I want to play Doom, right? That's there. How do you find it, right? Either someone gives you says this is the repository, or you want something like, I don't know, like you want to search for it, right? You maybe want to have community feedback. Like, what do other people think about that? Most people say, oh, don't touch that. That's like, you know, whatever, malware. So this is not really covered by the and I always go back to the standards, right? Or the open source, open standards that made the OCI put forward in that space. And that's, it's important to look at that from, does whatever you're looking at, and there are many, many open source offerings in that space, think of Harbor, et cetera, does at a registry, in addition to this basic functionality of push and pull, also offer discoverability features in whatever form and shape?
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah, so it's basically, so like Amazon.com is the default place for searching for every product that I want to order, Docker Hub is probably the go-to place for searching for container images for any software that I want to use. Yeah, and also important to mention here that many popular open source projects, they are marked with an official badge, so that establishes a little bit of trust that you're not downloading something from someone, but from really the open source project or the software vendor that is behind that. And yeah, that is really interesting. And also, I would say, I don't know, but so just for my gut feeling, a lot of a lot of Docker files start with from something from Docker Hub, really. Yeah. So I think that the base image that you start with often, very often, comes from Docker Hub as well. Okay. Yeah. So the scenario for Docker Hub is, so I would say, whenever you want to share something publicly, I think this is a really interesting thing. So you mentioned that kind of a marketplace that they have built in for open source stuff. And it's really the default in Docker. That's also interesting, I think. So there is a private part of Docker Hub as well, so you can use that. But personally, I don't. For me, that offering was never compelling. So from a pricing perspective, from I have to manage another service and stuff. So it's there, but I think it's not that popular, probably. But at least for me, it's not something I'm using regularly.
I can't comment on popularity there, but I do know, again, from our customer base, from the context of ECR, that if you are operating worldwide, if you have a global offering, then having or being able to do data locality counts for something, right? In the other words, you don't want to pull, if you sit somewhere in Singapore, you don't want to pull stuff from San Francisco, right? Let's put it that way. So you want to be able to say, you know, if it's geographically closer, then please do that. It means it's faster, etc., right? And potentially costs ingress is lower, right? And that's definitely something that a number of customers are asking for. And in that context, you obviously then also have the challenge that it is a known issue in the container roadmap. You want to automate process of replicating your artifacts across different regions, right? You don't want to do that by hand, right?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So I think that's really it for Docker Hub. And the last thing I had a look at when writing a blog post about that. So that's maybe an important note. So whenever we do a podcast episode, there's typically a blog post covering that as well. You will find a link to that in the show notes. And so for that, I had a look at the GitHub container registry. This is still in beta, but I think I was just interested in what GitHub is doing there. They have a container registry in place already, as far as I understood it. But now the new thing that you should use that is still in beta, but is the GitHub container registry. And I think, it is a container registry. so cool stuff. What I like about it is it's part of the GitHub ecosystem. So that means if you're hosting your source code on GitHub and your developers have access to those repositories already, it feels very natural to interact with the GitHub container registry as well. So I think that is maybe the USP for the GitHub container registry. So if developers want to interact not only with the source code, but also with the artifacts stored in the GitHub container registry, and by the way, there's GitHub packages as well for other kinds of artifacts, they already authenticated, they have their accounts, you have set up their repositories and organizations and everything. So that integrates really nicely. Because what I see in some organizations is not all developers have the possibility to authenticate with identity and access management for an ECR repository, or that sometimes is a little bit more complicated to do. So that is why I think if you use GitHub already, then GitHub Container Registry is a good choice for that scenario that I introduced earlier for collaborating on software development. So not only share your code, but also share artifacts with other developers, with other developing teams within the organization. So I think that is, from what I see from GitHub Container Registry, this is really there, the scenario where this is really an interesting choice. Okay, so I will put a link to the show notes as well. I set up a sample repository because I was just playing around with the GitHub container registry. And so as ECR integrates very well into the AWS ecosystem, of course, GitHub container registry integrates in the GitHub ecosystem. And if you use GitHub Actions for CI/CD, It's very well integrated there. It really works very nicely. I like the experience a lot. So that's my take on the GitHub container registry.
It's a really interesting offering that Microsoft has put together there in the context of, you know, you have on the one hand GitHub Actions that allow you to do everything from the testing to building artifacts, etc. And now you can also push these artifacts integrated there, having one place that essentially, theoretically, you don't actually need to leave your browser, right? You could do everything, like you could even edit if you, I don't know if the GitHub editor already supports VI, but if it does, I would definitely use that. You could give it a try, right? I bet that you nowadays, you probably don't need to leave the, if you go to github.com, right? You don't need to leave the browser again, right? You can have everything there, right? I've done documentation like mkdocs based stuff. Like everything is essentially in one place. So that's a very clever and very nice offering that Microsoft has put together there. Yeah.
Yeah. So in general, I like so I always call it the developer experience. So the way you interact with those tools, they're really raising the bar there. That's really cool stuff. Okay. Yeah. So last but not least, typically when I do a comparison of different AWS services or different offerings, I end with a comparison table. And this is always something that is hard to discuss on a podcast.
Right.
I have the link in the show notes where I try to compare that. I want to highlight a few things. So one thing that became obvious when putting together that comparison table is ECR is really when you look at it from a production readiness perspective, that's really where ECR shines. You have an SLA, you have multiple regions that you can choose. So the service is really mature. It's really battle-proof. It's really something that you can just use in a professional environment. So that's what I say is interesting compared to the other ones. And we discussed the features of ECR with immutable images, image scanning, and so on. That's also something the other services are lacking a little bit. I think probably the most important differences are, do you need a private repository? Is it for CI/CD? Or do you want to share your stuff publicly with the world? Then probably Docker Hub is a good choice. Or do you need something that integrates very well in your developer lifecycle and experience? Then that could be a reason for using GitHub, the GitHub container registry. So I would really say this is the overall summary of everything. And for details, I encourage the listeners to check out the comparison table.
I do have one question though. Is there a mm-hmm. reason why you didn't include Quay.io?
No.
I might be biased because I used to work at Red Hat but I really like their offering, right? It's really a
okay.
Well done.
So there is a reason for it. I've very seldomly worked with it. So that's why I don't know much about it. I can't really tell. So of course, that's maybe fair to mention. There are a lot of alternatives to those three options. Of course, GitLab has an offering. People are using how's the frog stuff called? Artifactory. Artifactory is one option. There are many, many options out there. But I was just focusing on, I was focusing on these three options because I know them. And also, I think they really cover different scenarios. That's why I put it in that way. And of course, there are many different options. Cool stuff. So one more thing before we end this episode. So you will find all the links in the show notes. You'll find the blog post and everything that Michael was discussing in the show notes. And I also want to highlight that we recently launched Rapid Docker on AWS, the video course. So we launched the ebook last year, and now the video course, the final version of it, is out there as well. So when you look for a way to deploy your application, to containerize and deploy your application in a rapid way on AWS, check out the ebook, or now also the video course, which includes the ebook, by the way, to get, as the name implies, really a fast way to get you started to deploy everything in a production-ready way on AWS with CI/CD included. Of course, it uses ECR as well. And the video course just goes through all the necessary steps to a little bit of background information about the use services and really gets you started quickly. Highly recommended. You'll find a link to that in the show notes as well. Cool. So, Michael, thank you very, very much for joining me for this podcast episode. It was really a pleasure to have you in the show, and I learned a lot because you're covering parts of the container ecosystem that I am not so familiar with. So I liked your perspective very much. I want to ask you to also share the link to the container security survey with me, and I will put that into the show notes as well. That would be really cool. So thanks very much.
Thank you so much for having me, Andreas. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Thanks for listening. Bye.